AOPA presents Never Again, True Pilot Stories from the World of General Aviation. In this episode, Get There-itis, maintenance issues, and an inaccurate forecast conspire against a cross-country Cessna pilot. Find out what happens in Post-Maintenance Surprise by Paul Sargent. It was a nice Texas early fall day in 1992. I had received my private pilot certificate the previous year and had about 75 hours as pilot in command. I thought it would be fun to fly my fiancée down to San Antonio and visit some friends there. My original intent was to pick up the flight school's Cessna 152, call sign 5 Kilo Alpha, after work on Friday and return Sunday morning. We planned to take off from Addison Airport around 5 p.m. and land at San Antonio International Airport around nightfall. Things did not go as planned. The school had lost my reservation, and there was no blue and white 152 waiting for us, tanks full, keys on the rack. They said another one was just coming out of annual in the hangar, 3-8 Hotel. I could have that one, although it was new to me. An hour or so later, it appeared on the ramp, signature still wet in the logbook. I started pre-flight. Step 1. Turn on the master and check the fuel level indicators. Oops, no fuel. Call the office, await truck. I completed the rest of the pre-flight and climbed the struts for a visual check of the fuel after filling. Oops again. No fuel caps. A hurried search of the hangar revealed 2 caps. We had engine start by 7 p.m., I taxied out to runway 16, received takeoff clearance, and climbed on runway heading. A call to Dallas approach, and I had clearance through the Dallas Class Bravo airspace, south over Love Field, and past the skyscrapers downtown as the light started to come on. As I rotated, one of the radios started to slide out of the rack, and my fiancée pushed it back in. Level at 5,000 feet and 20 miles south of Dallas-Fort Worth International Airport on a heading of 190 degrees, I noticed that the radio reception with Dallas departure was weak, but just good enough to communicate. We continued to San Antonio, skirting the restricted airspace around Fort Hood. Approaching the Class Charlie airspace around San Antonio, now fully dark at nearly 10 p.m., I couldn't raise San Antonio approach unless I circled as close as I could get under the outer shelf of the Class Charlie ring and called when facing away from the field. Finally, I made contact, got clearance, and made a rapid final approach, 120 knots on final, with a Southeast Airlines Boeing 737 close behind. We had a good time in San Antonio, dining on the Riverwalk and drinking margaritas and Corona beer outside the Alamo. Sunday morning dawned wet and drizzly. The sky was 700 to 800 feet overcast with light rain and cloud tops reaching 3,000 feet and extending to 30 miles north beyond which CAVU rained all the way to Dallas. With only a fresh private pilot certificate, I was grounded. We waited in the FBO lounge and waited. Around 3 p.m., the ATIS finally stated that the ceiling was 1,100 feet and visibility was 5 miles. We loaded up the Cessna and took off, along with 3 or 4 other VFR airplanes that had also been waiting. At 800 feet AGL, we were at the cloud bases again. Not familiar with the area and without a GPS, I headed north-ish. Trying to keep 500 feet below the clouds put me uncomfortably close to the ground. Climbing put me too close to the cloud base, and seeing radio towers ahead on the sectional, I decided this was not safe and started to do a 180 turn to the left. I made a radio call to air traffic control to let them know, but I couldn't get a response with the poor radios. I glanced at the attitude indicator, 60 degrees of bank and a lot of descent. A real-world, honest-to-goodness, unusual attitude in IMC. I leveled off in some random direction, very unhappy now, somewhat scared. I was a disoriented, low-time VFR pilot in instrument meteorological conditions, without a working radio, in Class Charlie airspace near a large airport. I knew this was often how accident reports began. Or ended. Finally, I raised approach and got vectors back to the airport, a wiser pilot, an unhappy pilot, a pleased to be on final approach pilot. We called our friends, stayed an extra night, and flew home on Southwest the next day. A week later, I flew commercially back to San Antonio, picked up 3-8 Hotel, and flew to Addison in the normal severe clear Texas autumn skies. Unable to raise Dallas approach, I flew around the Class Bravo and landed at Addison. A few days later, I was on the ground in my normal 152, and I saw 3-8 Hotel on approach, with the pilot complaining that he couldn't hear the tower, and the tower complaining that the pilot wasn't responding to his calls. I told the school about the radio issues, and I hadn't seen bad maintenance from the facility previously. The school went out of business soon afterward. Maybe the rot was just setting in. Get there-itis caused me to continue the flight with a substandard airplane at night, and again on the way back in conditions I wasn't ready for. The fact that it was only 15 minutes to clear skies influenced my decision. I didn't think about the fact that 15 minutes is enough time to die. My training was good. I got out of an incipient spiral dive, essentially on instruments. But my judgment was not. I learned to stay well inside the envelope. I never had to face a maintenance issue with an airplane I was flying before. The school's aircraft were generally well maintained, and I had never seen anything worse than a low tire. The next time I didn't like something, I would and did abandon the trip. ATIS or AWOS may not tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. Presumably it happened to measure the ceiling as a higher patch went over the field. I stopped flying for several years because of work, young children, and other things, and started again in 2006 when I bought my Beechcraft Sundowner, which used to be an instrument trainer and has one of everything and two of some things. I got my instrument rating in 2007 and commercial certificate in 2010. I have flown several hundred cross-country hours safely in my Sundowner, often in the conditions that should have grounded me that day in San Antonio. The Never Again Podcast is brought to you by AOPA, the Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association, and by AOPA Pilot Magazine. You can read more Never Again stories online at aopa.org/neveragain. While you're there, you can also join online discussions, check out AOPA's online flight planner, and take interactive online courses from the Air Safety Institute. All of this and more at aopa.org. The Never Again Podcast is produced by Royce Earle. Thanks for listening. Fly safely.